speedbuilders.com. Mr. Hooper, I want to go back to a sort of basic issue that I didn't cover before in a plan that's sponsored by a closely held corporation. Now let's just take this plan. We have a closely held corporation that is the employer of some doctors, and it's also the employer of a number of non-doctor employees. That's the situation here?
Uh-huh.
If a corporate sponsor like that decides to set up a plan, where does the money typically come from to fund the benefits in the plan?
The direct payment to the plan is made by the corporation.
Right. Where does the money come from? How does the corporation get the money?
Depending on the type of business it is.
A doctor's office?
From the fees they charge the patients.
The doctors are charging fees, and that represents just the income of the corporation?
That is correct.
Then the corporation takes a portion of that money and uses it then to fund all the benefits that are required by the plan.
Correct.
Have you done any work with small, closely held doctor corporations?
I have worked with that. I don't have experience with keeping the books of any corporation.
My question is, just do doctors often leave money in their corporation that's not dispersed?
Well, I think that they do not, but I am not privy to the books of small corporations.
Just in your work with doctors' corporations, is it not true that they try to take as much money out as is practical in the form of salary for themselves, in your experience?
I'm going to tell you again in my experience that I am not familiar with what corporations do. I know that most do not keep funds in the corporation. I do not know that as a fact. I'm not an accountant. I am not an advisor to corporations.
That's not my question. You've done work with doctors.
I've done work with doctors with respect to their retirement plans.
You've had dealings with doctors who are organized in the form of closely held corporations also?
Yes.
In your work, have they told you or have you observed that they tend to take out their money as salaries for themselves if they don't have a corporation? I'm not asking for bookkeeping practices or such as that. I'm asking, what are your thoughts as to what they do?
From the corporations I have experience with, that's the only way I can speak. Most of them, I believe traditionally, do take it out of the corporations. They don't leave it in.
Okay. Do you have any understanding as to why they may do that?
Absolutely not.
Have you done any work where you discuss tax issues with doctors in that kind of event? That is, what money they don't take out as a salary and is not used for other purposes is subject to a corporate tax?
That's right.
In your mind, does that guide their behavior?
Yes.
I'm not going to rehash your testimony that you've already given, but there are a couple of things I just don't understand. I'm not sure what the reason for the confusion is. Would you please look at your testimony, say, starting at about the middle of page 152 through the middle of 154? I just don't understand part of the response on page 153.
Okay, I'll be glad to.
I didn't understand your response on page 153, starting basically at line 14. Maybe that's because the question is muddled because of various things that happened. Could you state, in other words, what you're saying here, beginning at line 14? Read your testimony starting at line 14. Just read it silently. Tell me the question that you were trying to answer there. Is this true that all you're saying here is that one can accrue a benefit that cannot be distributed 100% because one has insufficient years of service? Is that the only thing you were attempting to say there?
Yes.
That's it?
That's all I meant to say.
You don't have to look at this, but on pages 147 through 152, and also 172 through 175 of your deposition, I asked you questions about whether the amounts which you described in P65 and P69 were calculated on PBGC, interest rates, or on plan interest rates. And at that juncture, you couldn't respond.
That's what it says here, correct.
Have you done any calculations since then which would enable you to determine whether or not you were using PBGC rates when you wrote P65 and P69?
No, I haven't.
You haven't done that?
No.
Could you please describe the process by which the clinic would decide each year whether it was going to contribute any money to the defined benefit plans, and if so, how much?
No, I can't describe that process.
Could you describe the Wilson Company's part in that process?
Our part would have been that they would tell us how much they wanted to give, and we would try to make calculations that would permit that amount.
Did you think in 1988 that an ending of one of the doctor's defined benefit plans at that time might limit the amount that that doctor could add to a defined plan in the near future?
That the stopping of the plan would have that effect. Is that your question? The ending of an individual's defined benefit plan would limit his participation in a defined contribution plan? I'm asking you, is that what you asked?
Yes. Let me withdraw that question. I see your point. Let me think about that for a while. In 1988, given the fact that the clinic had both a defined contribution plan and a defined benefit plan, what factors might limit future giving to a defined funding plan of those doctors who were working in the defined benefit plan?
Section 415 of the IRS code has an overall limit on amounts of benefits and/or funding among all qualified plans. Any benefit earned under a defined benefit plan must be recognized and may serve to reduce the giving to any defined funding plan.
What are the factors which limit any giving to a defined funding plan?